There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
A brilliant jurist, a man that did nothing wrong, a man that was caught up in a hoax that was set up by the Democrats using the Democrats' lawyers, and now they want to impeach him. I've heard this from many people. I think it's an insult to the American public. And I think you're going to see a lot of things happen on November 6th that would not have happened before. I thought that the way they conducted themselves, the way they dealt with a high level, brilliant, going to be a great justice of the Supreme Court, the way they really tortured him and his family, I thought it was a disgrace. I thought it was one of the most disgraceful performances I've ever seen.
Wow, and that's saying something these days. As President Trump getting ready to get on, I guess that's Air Force One. Although I will say this, in the future, the president, whenever he speaks, even if he's in the Rose Garden, ought to have some speakers with the sound of a jet or a helicopter, either Marine One or Air Force One, in the background. I kind of like the resonance in the background. We'll get Brendan Kirby's take on that and a whole lot more. Hey, Brendan.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
Doing good. Do you think the president ought to just have the sound of a jet or a idling helicopter in the background, no matter what he's doing?
I don't know. I had not considered that, but maybe. I think a lot of the president's supporters that cringe at what he says sometimes would prefer to have that background noise, very, very loud.
As the president, of course, talking about the process that ended on Saturday, or did it, with the confirmation and the vote for confirming Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. I want to get into this. I know you have a couple stories over at LifeSet, and I want to get into this question about women being driven away from the GOP by the Kavanaugh confirmation. But before that, is this over? I mean, you hear from, now these are going to be extreme, you know, extremists among the Democrats. I don't think this is rank and file Democrats, but maybe it is, saying that that it's going to be impeachment, that this is not over. What do you make of that?
Seems like it's over to me. I mean, I don't know how you would impeach him. You would have to get a bill of impeachment through the House, and then you would have to get a conviction in the Senate. And the rules are the same whether you're talking about impeaching a judge or the president. You would need a supermajority of 67 votes. I just don't see how you could possibly get that. And to me, it would be a tremendous waste of time and energy for the Democrats to be spending on an impeachment deal with Justice Kavanaugh. When there's a lot of other things that are on their plate. So my guess is it's nothing's going to come of it, but, you know, who knows?
You write here at LifeSet.com, even before Justice Brett Kavanaugh assumed a seat on the Supreme Court, liberal pundits and Democratic politicians were predicting that the women of America would rise up in rage. What about that?
Yeah, well, that's conventional wisdom, is that, women are extremely angry about this, and there's obviously are a lot of women who are angry about this, but are women en masse angry about this, or is it women who already are not Republicans, don't like President Trump, didn't like the pick in the first place? And that seems to be the case, and I judge this based on my own personal anecdotal experience looking at my Facebook feed. I didn't see people that came down differently on this based on their preconceived notions. And just my personal friends and acquaintances who wanted Judge Kavanaugh on the court tended to side with him through this the sexual assault allegations, and the people who already didn't like him this is one more reason why they didn't like him. So that sort of prompted me to take a look at what the data show on this, and so I looked at some polling, and the polling kind of confirms my anecdotal experience. There's no gender gap on this when you control for party. You know, overall there is. You know, women tend to lean Democrat, so more women are against Kavanaugh than men. But when you look, like, say, within the people who are Democrats, people who are Republicans, there's not really a gender gap. There's almost no difference between Republican women and Republican men on how they come down on this. And Marist asked the question, are you more or less likely to vote for a congressional candidate that supports Kavanaugh? And Democratic men were more likely than Democratic women to say that they would vote for a candidate that opposed Judge Kavanaugh. So, I just think it's a lot of lazy analysis on cable TV.
To me, it begs a question, too, that the accusation equals a conviction. You know, I've said this with the people that were shouting at Mitch McConnell and many others last week before this vote. And, if you had a scenario where you had somebody that had been convicted of this crime, but then led the exemplary life afterwards, had been there, had done it, had been convicted, and now they put that person up, that's one thing. You're saying that, that here's somebody who has that in their record, and y'all are trying to elevate that person to the next level. But we go back to this, that we have an accusation. I think we still have, people, I guess, go to their corners and assume everything is correct, one side or another, depending on who they want. But we have somebody who has not been convicted of a thing.
Right.
And so saying it's anti-women.
Now, what they'll always point out is, well, this isn't a court of law. This is a job interview. And I get that. And, I think...
But even in a job interview, I can't come in and say, Brendan Kirby spent most of his childhood stealing cars.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think that the burden of proof doesn't have to be beyond a reasonable doubt like it would be in a criminal court of law. But I still think there has to be some burden of proof on the person making the accusation. So I think we talked about this last week, but if you were hiring someone at the radio station and had a great resume and you offered him a job, and then somebody called you up and said that guy was a drug dealer in high school, he sold drugs to me, to the extent that you think that was disqualifying, if he even was a drug dealer in high school, if that was something, if you didn't want someone who was ever involved in drugs, you would still presumably give the person you're going to give the job to a chance to rebut it. And you would want some kind of indication that what this person is saying is true other than just his word for it. So I think that's where we come down.
All right. So you look at the data and it shows that there's not, but that kind of reinforces, even though you're doing it here by looking at, women not defecting the GOP because of this confirmation, it also just reinforces this fact that this country is, at least the narrative that comes out, and now the polling shows it as well, so deeply divided that not much moves the needle. I mean, there's not much that President Trump could do, people he could nominate, anything that would make those people say, oh, well, maybe he's not so bad. And there's also pretty much nothing that can be thrown against him that would have supporters of Trump go, well, I'm going to bail on this guy now.
Yeah, and I think that people should apply the Alan Dershowitz shoe and the other foot test. And it's hard for people to do. It's hard for people to step out of this. But if you're against Justice Kavanaugh and thought he shouldn't be confirmed, and are willing to believe the accusation against him, you really should have done a thought experiment. What if Merrick Garland, rather than being blocked by Republicans, had been given a hearing, and then after the confirmation hearing was done, someone made an accusation against this? Would you automatically believe the accusation because women need to be believed and she made it, and be willing to vote against him and see that seat slip away, or not? And I think it's hard for people to be honest about this on both sides, but I think that's sort of what you have to do and think honestly, genuinely, if you do that. And, the reason why I think that it's worth viewing this through a partisan prism is because what you said, nobody has seemed to change their mind on this. And so it can't just be a coincidence that people who already like Justice Kavanaugh didn't believe the accusation or believed his denial or believed she was mistaken or something, and people who didn't like him did believe it. I think there's a cause and effect relationship there.
All right, coming right back, more with Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile. We'll talk some more Kavanaugh, a little Rosenstein, or Stein, I say Stein. And also, you have to go back to 1969 to get an unemployment rate this low. What is that? Usually you would say, even though you have the one idea of midterms always benefiting the party that's not in the White House, how do you deal with that when you have an economy that's chugging along like this? We'll get Brendan's take when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 120, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. 10UR Convo, as the kids call it, with our buddy Brendan Kirby, LifeSet.com, author of Wicked Mobile, that if you're going to get way ahead of the game and do your Christmas shopping already, it's available for you now, right?
Yeah, it's available in bookstores. There's a Kindle e-version available. You can get it at Amazon. I just signed a copy today, as a matter of fact. Some people still ask me to sign it, so it's very gratifying.
Well, very good. Maybe we'll set something up here, and I'm pressing you into something on there and get you to a signing event for us.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right, very good. All right, so you said that it's all a bunch of noise, really. You don't see a real path to some sort of derailing of our most recent Supreme Court justice, the idea of the impeachment or what's going to happen here. I mean, he's in.
Oh, he's in now, yeah. And there is no asterisk by Supreme Court justices. I've heard people say that he won't have the legitimacy of a Supreme Court justice, or there'll be an asterisk by his name. And that's just not the way it works. Clarence Thomas went in the office under a cloud, and his rulings have counted as much as anyone else's. So he's in, If you cannot stop a nominee from being confirmed, you're certainly not going to be able to toss him out in an impeachment proceeding that's going to require 67 votes, unless something new comes up. If he committed some sort of high crime, or treason in office, you can maybe do that. But redredging this is not going to do it. And this is the problem with basing this, I think, on this old sexual assault complaint to begin with. Because it was so old, it was hard to corroborate. I have always held out the possibility that things might happen exactly the way Christine Blasey Ford said that it did, and the eyewitnesses that she named that say they don't remember it, might either be lying or just don't remember. And I think that's possible. But when it's hard to corroborate something that's 36 years old. And I don't see what would come of it, if the Democrats were to try to investigate this further. And it just seems like it would distract them from the rest of their agenda. I mean, they've got a whole long list of subpoenas that they are chomping at the bit to issue the Trump administration and investigate all kinds of things. And it just seems like, just from their standpoint, their time would be better spent on those things than chasing this, impossible goal of impeaching, Brett Kavanaugh, for something that proved inconclusive the first time around. But I guess we'll have to see.
All right. And I want to get into another story here. The headline here: most Americans have never seen unemployment this low. Monthly jobless rate clocks in at 3.7% as surging economy adds another 134,000 employees. So 69, right? That's how far back you have to go?
The unemployment rate was never this low during that 90s tech boom that we had when the economy was really good. It never got this low during the Reagan boom. You've got to go back to December of 1969, and I did a little math. Almost two-thirds of the people in the United States today were not even born yet when the unemployment rate was this low. So it is a historically low rate.
Okay. With that being said, before we get into the depths of the data mine here, I think this is interesting. And we talked about it a bunch during the 8 years of Obama about unemployment rate numbers and how it, you know, you had the U-12 number versus the other the number. This texter asking, basically, let me get it here. Are we still using the new way of figuring out unemployment that we were griping about when Obama was president?
I mean, it's the same. It's the same rate that was used. Now there is. Yeah, there are other ways to measure this. The labor force participation rate is one way to look at it, and that figure, I think it's about 62% or so, and that figure was unchanged from the previous month, and it's up a tiny bit, you know, from the end of the Obama years, but not substantially. And that's a really interesting number because it's hard to figure out, you know, are people on the sidelines and aren't looking for work because they just don't want to work because, you know, they're close enough to retirement age that they don't want to fool with it, or the wages they could get just don't make it worth their while. You know, what is the reason? Are they, you know, addicted to drugs, so they're not really employable? Are they...
Yeah, I mean, can you give us a quick breakdown?
Problems? I mean, it's a very complicated reason why that is.
Give us a quick understanding of labor force participation rate versus when we talk about unemployment numbers.
Right. When we talk about the unemployment numbers, we're looking at all of the people who don't have jobs who want... So these are people who are actively looking for work. They're collecting unemployment benefits. They're applying for jobs. And that's the number when we say that's the unemployment rate. When you talk about the labor force participation rate, that is you're looking at the entire universe of working age people. And then the percentage of them that have jobs. So that when you look at the gap, you would be counting people who, you know, are looking for work and haven't found it, and people who aren't looking for work. Because there's a lot of people who will drop out of the labor force. They don't have jobs. Maybe they look for jobs for a while, and then they just stop looking. And they're not counted anymore as unemployed. They're just off. And it's tough to tease out because a lot of those people, you know, they're not looking for work, not because they're discouraged, but because, you know, they might be disabled, you know, they might not be eligible for it. They might be getting disability payments, or, you know, they might be 60 and have decided just to retire. Even though, you know, they're technically working age. So, you know, that's very complicated. And then there's another line where they look at discouraged workers, people who are working part-time but would like to work full-time. And that number ticked up a little bit last month over the previous month. And honestly, I haven't looked to see what the trend on that has been over the last few years. But that's one way to look at it, too. You know, I think we have a lot of evidence that the economy now is going very fast, and most people who want a job can get one. And then you have the job quality issue. You know, wages have started to climb a little bit, but, you know, are still depressed in a lot of areas. And there's a lot of people whose wages, after controlling for inflation, still haven't caught up to where they were in 2007. And, you know, a lot of people just figure, you know, if I have to take a job paying $8 an hour, I'm not going to do that. I'll just stay home, and, you know, maybe we'll just rely on my spouse's income, and maybe my time is worth more than that. And that's the issue.
Yeah, that's a tough thing about that is trying to figure out the actual reasoning, right? The motivation for it. We, you know, people would say during Obama that there were so many programs and so much government safety net that's why you didn't have people participating in the labor force. But I don't think much of that has changed yet, has it?
You know, I don't think it has changed a lot. You know, a little bit at the margins. You know, the number of people on food stamps has gone down, but it's nowhere near to what it was at its pre-recession level. And that should be something really that ought to concern people, because Congress didn't pass a law in those years, you know, expanding the eligibility for food stamps up. So it's not like the rolls are bigger because more people are eligible. You know, but yet all these people went on to food stamps. I think the government, part of it is the government made a big effort to tell people, you know, that they, you know, who were eligible, that they are eligible, and then people signed up. So you would expect that when the economy is growing at 4% and unemployment is this low, there would be a dramatic drop off in food stamps, and there's been a modest drop off, and you know, that should be concerning, I think, to everyone, no matter how robust you want the safety net to be, because all things being equal, you would rather people be able to support themselves than to need to be dependent on government. And the fact is, there are more people than ever dependent on government, almost, you know, not quite what it was in the peak of the recession. But, you know, when you compare this to other times of economic prosperity, we have way more people that are benefiting one way or another from government assistance programs. And that's a challenge. I mean, that puts a burden on the government that's already in debt, and it makes people dependent on the government. And it, you know, I think most people would say it's better to not be dependent on the government.
Yeah, I just wonder, and you bring something up, and this is one of those unknown, because you would have to know what's going on in everybody's psyche. But once on those programs, what percentage are there people that just won't come back? You know what I'm saying? Once they got there, they won't come back.
Yeah, well, it's hard. I mean, one of the things we saw during the recession is there was a big spike in the number of people who were disabled, you know, mm-hmm. who were qualifying for disabled benefits. And there are a lot of economists think that that's a proxy for poverty. And you tend to see higher rates of disability payments in counties with high unemployment and low economic opportunity. So people, you know, not eligible for welfare under the normal means, or they've exhausted their cash welfare allotment under the welfare reform. So this is a way for them to get, you know, welfare essentially. Well, the problem is once you've qualified as disabled, it's hard then when the economy gets better to go back to work, because then the government's going to say, well, wait, but I mean, you were disabled, now you're not disabled. Why did you suddenly get cured of your disability? So I think that leaves a lot of people stuck.
There it is. Brendan, as always, we appreciate it. People want to find out more about these stories or whatever else you're working on, where do they go?
Yeah, you can hit me up on Twitter at Brendan K. Kirby. You can go to lifeset.com to read the politics.
All right, and we're going to do something where you can come sign some copies of Wicked Mobile.
Yeah, that'd be excellent to set something like that up.
All right, very good. Coming right back, we'll grab your phone calls at 343-0106. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 136 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Monday style, looks like Wednesday into Thursday for Hurricane Michael, with the talk about affecting Florida Panhandle. East of here will be on the good side of the storm, which will bring the dry air in the lee here, right? To be the lee of the storm, so to speak. We'll get the north winds, and that'll be bringing our temperatures down. The first kind of fall-like weather we've had the whole season, really, and that will come, looks like, Thursday, Friday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So good news by the weekend, but we got to get there first. Hot with a chance of showers this afternoon. Got a normal summertime fare here in October. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. All right, I'm gonna bring this back up, because you heard the conversation I was having with Brendan about the unemployment numbers, okay? And that they're really looking good right now, but we have to be fair and make sure you compare them the same way they were compared during the Obama administration. And still, it's a definite success for the Trump administration, but when you say 3.7, it means out of those people wanting to get work. And you got to ask the question about those who don't want to go back into the workforce. And I'm going to combine this with a story that may not seem at the beginning here to make sense to you. But there's a story out that that AI entities, whether they be a robot or a computer or artificial intelligence entities, should be given rights similar to humans. Okay? So artificial intelligence, you know, in whatever form. I know we you would picture, if you're going to give citizenship, it's going to be like a robot, but it could be a computer. Specifically, Saudi Arabia has granted citizenship to a robot called Sophia. Okay? Now this is of course, I mean, got to say, I mean, you barely, in Saudi Arabia, human beings that are women don't have full rights. But Saudi Arabia, is, according to a story from The Independent, that came out, I think the story's from last year, Saudi Arabia, first country to give a robot citizenship, the move and attempt to promote Saudi Arabia as a place to develop artificial intelligence, blah, 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 blah. So they've given this one robot, I guess, human status, which brings me back to the unemployment number. And I know we've talked about this on the show many times, actually over the years, had some pretty good conversations, but you wonder about that. As we look at the workforce participation rate, what happens when AI and other technologies move in and take so many jobs that there's really not a reason, with a certain skill set, unless you retool your skill set, that job is not there, right? So we have a downturn in the economy, which will happen again. I mean, it always does. You have a downturn in the economy. People are laid off. And when those companies come back, they come back with technology instead of humans working those jobs. And because of AI, they can fill those jobs in mass, not just like, oh, we're automating. You know, we still have to have the, you know, we still have to have humans, and then we have the automation. Maybe big swaths of the job pool go away. So what do we do then? What's the real unemployment number then? And what, how do we make a system where you take care of those people? If we think it's a big deal now, those who have, for a multitude of reasons, I think that was fair of Brendan to say, because, I mean, to say, you know, with all reasons all people are laying out of the workforce, I don't think that's fair. But say going forward, it's a situation where the job is just not there. The person's not lazy. The job is not there. What do you do at that point? What do you do at that point? If you give now the artificial intelligence, is do you give it citizenship and tax it on its productivity and then use that money to pay the human beings that are put out of work? By, I mean, how do you deal with this going forward? Is this an issue for the midterms? Of course not. This is an issue for 2020? Probably not. But at some point, I imagine the next two decades or so, this is going to be an issue. I mean, this is going, as companies continue to do automation, not just the old automation where, hey, we got people working on the floor, but we got robots assisting. I'm talking about, you imagine whole swaths of the economy where somebody will say, well, they'll need to have somebody to fix computers. I don't know if you've read enough stories about AI. They create computers that fix computers. They make a computer that fixes computer that fixes computer. Listen, there will be some humans in the mix, but that number will be very, very small. What do you do with all those folks? How do you, if we think that the workforce participation rate, those people that laid out the workforce, now is an issue because they're not, you know, people just chosen not to look for work. What if it goes years and years and years, people trying to go back in, and with their skill set, there's nothing there for them? It's something we're going to be think about going forward for sure. All right, 343-0106, 343-0106. Let's see here. Okay, the texture here. I lost my manufacturing job in 2015. Looked for work in that field for over 2.5 years. Couldn't find work. Bachelor of Science degree, over 30 years experience. Yeah, somebody asked it like that robotic lawnmower that I have. That's far, right? That's definitely, well, you know, the self-driving vehicles. I say this time and time again. The companies are not, and investors are not pouring money into self-driving vehicles because they think it's neato. They think it's, oh, isn't it cool? Look at that, a self-driving vehicle. They're doing that because they're putting the money in it because they see where it is on the back end. You know, I think about this. So, you know, many of my relatives with CDLs and drive commercially. I mean, I think about their future. If you have these vehicles that can drive themselves, that don't have to rest, nobody's checking their logbook, right? They're running 24/7. They're programmed by speed to get, you know, just like a trucker has to do now, kind of time it out so they don't waste any time, so they get right to where they're delivering whatever it is they're delivering on time when they're ready to receive it at the receiving. What about that? What if trucks are doing that automated wise? I mean, what are we going to do? And then if you start looking at, oh, well, then, you know what? We have this amount of the workforce that's not participating. Well, what if the jobs aren't there? What do you do? So, Texter says, when computers first became mainline and everyone started getting them, I made the statement that you're looking at the new middle class in America. We'll have very rich people and very poor people with the computers in between. You know, I wonder if that's, you know, we'll give them the citizenship status. It's a, it was a, believe me, it was a stunt. The Saudis were trying to recruit people to come work, you know, in Saudi Arabia, like a robot creation friendly zone is why this story came out last year about the giving citizenship to this robot Sophia. I mean, it's all they're doing, and they're attempting to, you know, hey, we're friendly for this kind of technology. But it brings up a question too. Would that be the move to say those robots are they something that can be taxed by income? Like, in other words, the robot creates this amount of wealth, it would receive this kind of salary, and therefore we're going to tax these companies that use it and use that money to give to the human beings that are now without a job. I don't know. It's just, I wonder where we are in 20 or 30 years as we look at the numbers for the labor force participation rate now, what we just talked about with Brendan, and then going forward in a scenario where there's people that aren't actively looking for work because those jobs aren't there. And I know the old buggy whip argument, and doing this will create a whole new suite of jobs. I hope you're right. But the stuff I've read from the pointy heads on this is that the AI and the robotics will outpace that. And it'll create whatever the next, you know, automation's already created opportunity for the next group of people to work on that automation. They're saying that next will also be automated. It's good. I mean, I have time to go fishing. Good. All right, coming right back, more Midday Mobile.
Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile Monday style. I want to check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and talk a couple things here. And precious metals is part of it, and also this buy-sell appraisal y'all do. What is that?
People come in all the time that have a coin collection that somebody passed down to them, and they don't really have a good idea what the darn thing is worth. Sometimes they want to hold on to it. Sometimes they want to sell it. Sometimes they need to split it up between their heirs. So we can do an appraisal of that coin collection, that jewelry collection, tell you what it's worth at today's prices. And the cool thing is, it's absolutely free. And if you decide, well, man, that sounds great, I want to go ahead and sell my stuff, well, we will, in most cases, we'll cut you a check right then and there.
You know, it was a very tough time for families in dealing after loss of a loved one. You hear so many horror stories about people getting crosswise over what things are worth, especially things that don't have, common knowledge of what they're worth, like so many things on coin collections and all that. And you can go online and get more confused than you can get certain. Y'all will do that, and y'all, as an independent arbiter, will say what stuff's worth, right? I mean, so you can say, it's not me, it's Ron, it's Angelo. They said it's worth this.
Well, exactly, because you're right. A lot of times families get really worked up because grandpa used to tease the kids and go, and I can see you doing this, Sean, 20 years from now, you know, saying, guys, kids, I have a $10,000 coin in my collection. So whoever my favorite grandchild is, you're going to get that one. And then you go, and everybody's fighting over that $10,000 coin when all you were doing is pulling people's legs.
Right.
So sometimes we have to sort of, you know, be the voice of reason in all of this. And again, like you said, we're a neutral party. We're not here to convince you to keep that coin or your sister to keep the other coin. We're there to just give you a fair, honest value.
All right. We can get that done. And also, quickly, what's it looking like in the precious metals world?
It was really interesting. It started to climb last week, and then all of a sudden, over the weekend, it dropped again. So gold and silver prices are back down and quite affordable. Matter of fact, we just got in some $20 gold pieces and a bunch of silver bullion, and it's been going out of here like hotcakes lately.
All right, give us directions to come see you at Mobile Bay Coins in the real world and online.
In the real world, we're at 2204 Government Street in Denver.
We just lost you, Angelo.
There.
Angelo?
Now.
There we go. Angelo, can you hear me?
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government. Or you can always go onto Facebook and look up and follow Mobile Bay Coins there.
Hey, thank you. Angelo, check it in for Mobile Bay Coins. And let's do this as well. Let's go, Dalton, what do you want to do? Going to do six? Okay, caller six at 343-0106. Caller number six, win them before you can buy them. Tickets for Jim Gaffigan, Grammy-nominated comedian, actor, writer, producer, and two-time New York Times best-selling author, top touring performer, multi-platinum-selling father of five. You've known around the world for his unique brand of humor, which largely revolves around fatherhood and his observations on life and Hot Pockets. He's going to be at the Wharf Amphitheater on Saturday, May 11th. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. online at Ticketmaster.com. Charge by phone, 800-745-3000. Once again, this show coming up in May, tickets go on sale Friday. And if you're caller number six right now at 343-0106, you just won a pair of them. And I tell you what, we'll give you another shot tomorrow morning at winning them before you can buy them. Tickets for the Quality Time Tour with Jim Gaffigan. All right, a couple of notes here. I just want to get these off my list before we run into the Paul Feinbaum show. Number one, I put it up on Twitter earlier and it's gotten some attention here. A Natural Light has stepped it up here. They've released a new 77-pack of beer. So, you know, the old days, the 24-pack, the case was the standard, right? That was the big one, the 24 cans. And then you went just a little bit better, and some companies came out with their 30-packs. Well, now, Natural Light, you know, the beer with a taste for food and other things, it comes in a 77-pack. They say it's a sturdy, hexagon-shaped cardboard box with handles. It weighs 65 pounds. You know, I was looking at pictures of them, and nowhere on there does it say Team Lift. You know, it's like when you're at the hardware store and you see something, it says, yes, warning, it's heavy. It's got a warning, it's heavy something, but it doesn't have the Team Lift symbol on there. But yes, yeah, so Natural Light has now come out with a 77. Well, it's only available in Maryland right now. I guess in College Park, Maryland, where the University of Maryland is, the Terps, right? But possibly this 77-pack of Natural Light could go nationwide. Hexagonal-shaped box, weighs 65 pounds, and comes with 77 beers. All right, so that's one of the things I wanted to clear. And then while we're in the carb world here, the company behind Top Ramen, like I call them ramen noodles, right, and cup of noodles, has now launched their official online store. Now, I don't think she's listening right now, so that's good because I have one of my children is obsessed with the ramen. This online store is going to give you a chance to get things like ramen t-shirts, hats, pillows, even ramen Halloween costumes. So there's the website. It's the Nissin, you know, the brand Nissin, Nissin fanstore.com, Nissinfanstore.com, and you can buy logoed ramen gear. Cup of noodles stuff, Top Ramen stuff. If that's how you want to roll, you want the Top Ramen snapback hat, they got it. Top Ramen men's t-shirt, they've got it. You want a cup of noodles costume just in time for Halloween, they got it. You want a sweater that says cup of noodles for your small dog, they've got it. You want a pillow that says Top Ramen, they've got it. Baby onesies, they got it as well. So, just letting you know that's available. I am going to link this through in just a second on my Twitter feed so you can go check out the logoed items. If there's somebody on your list, yes, and there is on mine, this will be a Christmas gift waiting to happen. Who knew that I would enter a world where the food that we just had enough money to sustain ourselves to stay alive in college would become something so hip it would have logoed merchandise, but it's a thing. And ramen and cup of noodles, the Nissin company, now has their online fan store. All right, congratulations to Gail Gibbons, winner numero uno in our Win 'em Before You Can Buy 'em, Jim Gaffigan. Win 'em Before You Can Buy 'em all week long. Tickets tomorrow morning. We'll give you a shot during Mobile Morning sometime between 6 and 9. And once again, tickets go on sale on Friday. The show's at the Wharf Amphitheater, Saturday, May 11th. Tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. Online at Ticketmaster.com. Charge by phone, 800-745-3000. but you can win them this week. How about that? It's a good deal. All right, we'll give you another shot tomorrow. Gail Gibbons, congratulations on that. Paul Feinbaum show is on the way next. Oh, look at this. Is that like the... Oh, it's the flat-billed hat. Can we not get... Don't I want you to look at that. I mean, if they would make that hat in the trucker style, if we could have a top ramen or cup of noodles, now they've got the flat. I don't like the flat bill. I know that's an age thing, right? I'm my age. I like a curved bill. I guess you could curve it, but it's the flat bill top ramen hat. All right, this link is going up at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. It's good stuff here. Quality gift ideas for the ramen lover on your list. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. See y'all in the morning.